You're listening to Radio Influence.
You're listening to the Games Galore Podcast with your host, Brian Edwards.
Welcome in, ladies and gents. Games Galore 52. I'm your host, Brian Edwards. Papa Harbo back.
Yes, sir.
Attending to Papa duties last week. Michigan survives last week.
Barely.
Not looking good over there.
Nope.
Y'all have a little... Do y'all have a little test? Oh, no, I just lean Maryland plus 17.5. And nope. It might be a little tester for y'all.
We're not good on the road, man.
And Maryland's had 2 weeks to prepare. No, you're at home, actually.
Oh, are we at home with Maryland?
Yeah, you're at home.
We're back?
Okay. But they've had 2 weeks to prepare, which is always a good thing.
Well, after Maryland, we have an intense lineup.
Dude, when I was thinking of this, here, I got your schedule here. Oh, Whiskey, and then at Sparty, then Open Date, then Penn State, and then obviously Ohio State down there. Like, when I hear Urban talk about Buckeye Nation, Fuckeye Nation, like he was in the press conference last week, I just kind of want to projectile vomit.
I get that.
Yeah, like, I mean, not like... Like, to hit the wall up high over there.
Spray.
Right. I mean, God. I mean, hating someone is such poor form. I don't like to do it, but that dude. Ugh. And what the fuck was James Franklin thinking last week? I've always liked Franklin. What he did at Vanderbilt will probably never, ever be replicated. I'm not looking at their team page right now, but I believe he took over when they were 2-10. Gets them to a bowl game, which was like their... Bobby Johnson got them to one bowl game, and they had not been to a bowl game prior to that since like 82 or something. Or just close to 82-ish, if you will. And he gets them to 3 straight bowl games, goes 9-4 back-to-back, and gets the PSU job. And he's done really well there, and I think he's a really, really good coach. But under no circumstances... Or this is what I wrote on Vegas Insider... Under no circumstances, unless you're in the power eye formation and your running backs are Earl Campbell, Jim Brown, and Bo Jackson, with apologies to Herschel Walker. That's the only time you would even consider running the ball on 4th and 5 on the most important play of the season. And when your quarterback is Trace McSorley, he's your horse, he's your senior, he's your Heisman candidate. And you're good, and obviously he can run and throw for a first down on 4th and 5. And you're going to take the ball out of his hands on 4th and 5. Just the dude absolutely lost his sanity. And don't give me any of this run pass option RPO shit. The quarterback's read. Fuck all that. Under no circumstances, unless power eye formation, Jim Brown, Earl Campbell. And either Bo Jackson or Herschel Walker are your 3 running backs. And you still don't even run it then. And you on 4th and 5, you run for a 2-yard loss, got hit immediately. I mean, what the fuck was that? Did it gross you out, Harbo? Because I know you root against Ohio State like me. Were you watching?
I didn't watch that one.
Did you hear about it? Did you see the hot? Penn State was winning most of the game against Ohio State.
Right.
They were up by 12 with like 6.5 minutes left. Ohio State breaks like 3 tackles on this bubble screen like play and goes like 50 yards to the house. Get it back, score again. But Penn State was driving, 4th and 5, plenty of time. I don't even remember
how close were they?
I want to say they were at like Ohio State's 30-ish, maybe Ohio State's 35 or 40.
Okay.
But there was plenty of time. The
right.
Point, well, all you needed was first down and then you got plenty of time. It was just the worst play. It was worse than Pete Carroll's throwing forward on 1st and goal with Marshawn Lynch ready to take it in. And you kind of wanted to burn a little clock anyway to not give Brady the ball back. And you throw it and you throw an interception in that Super Bowl a few years ago. It was way worse a play call than that.
So it was a horrific move.
Oh, horrific is not by any standards a strong enough word to describe
getcha,
it.
Getcha.
I mean, horrific, to put it vanilla-ishly. And what the fuck is Bobby Petrino doing? I mean, thank goodness for Franklin's debacle of a play call, and that Louisville and FSU suck this year, or him deciding to pass it on first and 10 with less than 2 minutes left when you're leading in field goal range against FSU. That was a catastrophic decision as well. We've got good guests today. We got Gam Lou. It's fight week. We are, 48 hours from the start of the UFC card. Obviously headlined by the notorious and the eagle, Khabib Nurmagomedov. And I can spell it too. let's see what the odds are. If you like Khabib, be patient, my friends. Be patient. These odds are going to come down a lot.
You think so?
Oh, yeah. Well, I think, you know, the Irish, as the Irish folks get to Vegas and not only have their own money to bet on McGregor, but probably have their cousin's money, their aunt, their brother-in-law, all their money to put money down on McGregor. So right. Whether it's public or sharp money, it's going to be a lot of money on McGregor. Probably starting tonight and tomorrow and all day Saturday. If you like Khabib, he is currently minus 170 at most books. Your best underdog price that I can see right now is plus 160 at five dimes. So if you like McGregor, I say you get him now. And if you like Khabib, you're just chilling. You're just chilling. We'll talk the entire card with our guy Gam Lou here very, very shortly. And we've got Smokin' Dave Koken making his Games Galore debut. Not that we haven't tried to get Dave on before. He has a radio show mid-afternoon in Vegas, which a lot of times does not coincide with ours, so it's just been a time thing. But DM'd me on Twitter. He wanted to have me on the show, and would love to be on the pod, and he'd send me a fourth round draft pick.
There you go.
So that's a deal. Deal. So I was on his show Tuesday. No Golic and Wingo tomorrow. They are, where did the producer tell me they are? They're on location somewhere and have too many guests,
live.
The location guest, yeah.
Right, right.
So that's okay. Maybe I'll catch a few more zebras.
Get to stay up late tonight.
Tonight, this morning, or tomorrow morning, yes. Press conference coming up in 20 minutes. It'll already be in the books by the time Games Galore listeners will be tuning in. But
have you watched any of the embedded stuff?
Yes, I have watched all three, and I'm sure number four will be coming out in the next hour or two. Pretty good.
Yeah, I think so.
Pretty good. Did you see they've made this chick fight? And I'm okay with chick fights. But they've made the flyweight, the 125 pound title, which has been vacated. That's going to be the main event at UFC 230 at Madison Square Garden.
Yeah, I saw that. And I just saw it through Joe Rogan first. And he was like, no offense, I don't even know who this is.
I don't either. And he calls the fights. So
yeah.
And he's not trying. He's really not trying to be
offensive. No, he was cool about her.
Yeah. He's never even heard of her. And why are they married to having a belt having to be on the line for a main event? I mean, it's not like that. First off, they do. I know Connor's not on that show, but
right.
They made Connor and Nate the main event when that wasn't for a belt. When Misha and Holly were the co-main for the title.
Right.
Great night. What was that? 196, I think. Oh, that was a fun night because I had Misha's big dog, and she had to get that choke because she was down 3-1. Misha had a baby.
Did not know that.
Kind of like you, Harbo. You and Misha have a lot in common.
Yes, we do.
newborns. We'll get into my UFC picks, and I have a few when we talk to Gam Lou. Okay, let me give out a few of my picks that I like this weekend. It's not as much as that I love Auburn, I just see bad things going on in Starkville really, really fast. And I'm as guilty as anyone, maybe probably more so, into buying into Mississippi State a little too early. Part of that clearly being Kansas State, sorry, KIV, is dog shit this year. And when they went and just manhandled K-State, I mean, even when K-State's not that good, you don't just prance into Manhattan and throw down, what was it? How about they beat them by? They beat them by 4 touchdowns that day? And I just heard, I was listening to Stanford Steve and Falica the Bear on the Behind the Bets pod. And, gosh, I forget the name of the guy who was their guest, but he was talking about, he called that game, and it was 3 touchdown beatdown, 31-10. But the guy was saying it didn't feel like 31-10. It felt like 52-3. And I watched parts of that game. So they were out to a 3-0 start, straight up and against the spread. Then they go to Kentucky, the house that Kroger and Jim Rohde built. and Jim Rohde was in the house, actually, that evening. And they Mississippi State got smashed by Kentucky 28-7. And then last week, my Gators go in there. And, you know, Mullen wisely can't trust Franks to do anything. Has to pull out a gadget play, a double pass, Kadarius Toney to Morrell Stevens to get our only touchdown. But they did nothing on us offensively. In fact, Mississippi State has only had 403 yards of total offense against UK and UF the last 2 weeks. Only 13 points. They've only turned it over once. So it's not like they're giving the ball away. They just can't move it. And Fitzgerald is struggling. I think Moorhead has a very quick trigger on him this weekend. I think we will very, very likely see Keaton Thompson. And Keaton can play. He outplayed Lamar Jackson in the bowl game win last year, the Tax Slayer Bowl. He nearly led an improbable second-half comeback at the Egg Bowl when Fitzgerald had dislocated his ankle in the first half. And in the opener against Stephen F. Austin when Fitzgerald was suspended, Thompson threw 5 touchdown passes without an interception and ran for team-high yardage. I think it was 90 and change. It might have been over 100. And either one more touchdown, maybe even 2. Where was I writing this? I was writing that somewhere earlier. Not on the notes in front of me. Anyhow, I like Auburn. I know Auburn looked like shit last week. 24-13 non-cover against Southern Miss. It was a one-possession game fairly deep into the fourth quarter. But it's look, when you are struggling offensively, when you're sky-high 3-0, now you've lost back-to-back, and now you look at Mississippi State. If they lose to Auburn this week, then they've got an open date. Then they're at LSU. Then they're A&M at home. And don't think La Tech at home is some cakewalk. I mean, they were only down by 3 at LSU, late third quarter the other week? Then at Alabama. I mean, you got a lot of L's left on the schedule. I think team chemistry is an issue in Starkville. I think there's a real sense of urgency, but I think kind of in a panic kind of way rather than a focused kind of way. Under Malzahn, Auburn 7-4-1 against the spread as a road favorite, and they are third in the nation in scoring defense, allowing only 12.6 points per game. There's my favorite play of the week, folks, and it's more fading Mississippi State than playing on Auburn. But I'm going to trust Auburn's defense to get it done, and Auburn's my favorite play. All right, stay tuned. I'll go over other plays. I've got a look on the total for Missouri-South Carolina, which is the second highest the Gamecocks have seen under or during Will Muschamp's tenure. Oh, we got to talk about that ball game. We're too worried about criticizing James Franklin and BP. Not the oil spill company, Bobby Petrino. Then we got to give kudos to that Syracuse-Clemson game. But boy, that was a good one. That was a good one. And you heard right here that Syracuse would cover and cover rather easily. And they did. Games Galore 52. We'll be back in just a few. Games Galore listeners, we finally got a sponsor. It's our guys at Vivid Seats. We all love a night out. Whether it's going to watch some UFC fights, seeing our favorite band in person, or being there in the crowd to cheer on our favorite team, the Gators, in my case, for Harbaugh, the Maize in Blue. With Vivid Seats, you can attend the concert, show, or sporting event of your choice at a great price. Vivid Seats is the top source for tickets for all the live events you want to go to. You can sort by price or look for seats in the section and row of your choice. To make things even better, Vivid Seats is giving listeners an exclusive promo code for new customers to receive 10% off your first purchase with Vivid Seats to save even more money. Go to the App Store or Google Play and download the Vivid Seats app. Use promo code INFLUENCE in all caps for 10% off your first purchase with Vivid Seats. Every purchase is backed by a 100% buyer guarantee. From the biggest concerts and games to the hottest theater and more, Vivid Seats has it all. Download the app and enter promo code INFLUENCE for 10% off your first purchase with Vivid Seats. Make a memory that lasts a lifetime and let Vivid Seats help you get to your favorite live event. Welcome back, Games Galore 52. Let's get out to Phoenix for one of our favorite friends of the show, Gam Lou. Follow him on Twitter at GAMBLOU, and you can get all his work, which includes UFC, NFL. A little bit of pucks here and there, a little bit of this, a little bit of that, profitable sports gambling at gamlu.com. What's going on, my man?
Not too much, Brian. Always a pleasure to jump on with you and talk about a big, huge fight weekend in Vegas that's got arguably one of the top fights for we UFC enthusiasts maybe in, 5-10 years.
Absolutely, and nobody breaks the fight game down better than Gam Lou. And I want you to break down Khabib, the Eagle Nurmagomedov, against the notorious Conor McGregor at length. However, I just want, before we get to your complete breakdown, I want your thoughts on this premise that I have and that I've said all week on a number of radio shows. I think if you like McGregor, you bet him now. I think if you like Khabib, you chill and are patient, because I think late McGregor money will come in, if not from anybody else, a bunch of the Irish hooligans and their money that they have from their cousins and their aunts and their uncles, et cetera, that it's all going on McGregor. Your thoughts on that potential line movement between now and, leading up to Saturday night?
Yeah, that's an astute observation, Brian, and it happens to be based on history. And in McGregor's previous major fights in Las Vegas, you're exactly right in that once the droves, or the Irish hooligans, as you call them, arrive in Vegas, and oh, by the way, that's between right now and sometime tomorrow noon or tomorrow evening. So Thursday, Friday, they arrive, and they're there to bet McGregor. They tend to bet smaller amounts, but in waves. So a lot of bets, smaller amounts, and Vegas is already seeing a little of that trend. But the pattern has absolutely been that they get off the plane, they go to the casinos, and they bet, and the price on McGregor's foe tends to work against him as McGregor's price goes away based on all the Irish people betting him. So with that said, I think that's the case, and I think there will be some compression. I wonder how many of the Irish droves are still coming. I wonder if they're going to still make those same bets. I tend to think that the bookmakers are wary that there's a bunch of people like you and I, Brian, waiting in the wings to try and get the best price on Nurmagomedov we can. And I think that there's a little tug of war there, and I think they may not make it so easy to get Nurmagomedov at minus 125 or minus 130. And so while I totally agree with you and I think there'll be some compression, I wonder just how much it'll be. But it would be savvy and it'd be smart and it's advisable if you do like Nurmagomedov to look at the line every hour and determine when it starts to move. And if it moves in your favor, be patient. And it starts to move the other way, you may want to go ahead and grab it. Now, a month or two ago when the line came out at minus 165, I grabbed some right there because I wanted the bird in the hand. And so I own what minus 160, I think it's minus 160 actually, but whatever that is, I own some there and I'm watching. But if something funny happens, if a guy comes in overweight or slips on ice, At least I got my bird in hand with Nurmagomedov at minus 160, and we can eventually break down the fight and why I like that position, you know, as that comes.
Yeah, and we can go ahead and get to that now, but as you're doing that or before you're doing it or while you're doing it, if you've heard anything on Khabib's weight cut, feel free to, I think it was Ariel Helwani's show with Connor the other day, which that was Monday, if I'm not mistaken. I think that Ariel told Connor that he had heard Khabib was at 166 on Monday, which I think is probably a decent place to be. But remember his last fight, didn't he like show up for fight week at 155 when he ended up fighting Iaquinta when it was going to be Ferguson? And the floor is yours to break that down and address any of that on the weight cuts.
Yeah, there have been times in the past when Nurmagomedov struggled at 55, but these two guys are world-class professionals. I do not anticipate any problem. I will say this, that while after McGregor hydrates and gets into the ring, even when he fought Diaz at 170, he only weighed 168. So when he fully hydrates and hits the ring on Saturday, he'll probably be buck 65. Nurmagomedov walks around at 75 or 80. And so for him to be 166 for a 155 right now, I love where he's at. That is very encouraging. Just for reference sake, there's another 155er on the card. His name's Scott Holtzman. We'll talk about him later. He's fighting on this card. He works out of the MMA lab here in Phoenix, and I go watch those guys spar every Saturday. And I asked John Crouch, the Swami out there at MMA lab, as I was watching Hot Sauce is his nickname, work in the octagon, I said to him, John, how much do you weigh right now? And he's at a buck 75. And I was like, holy shit, he's a week away. Is that a problem? And Crouch said, absolutely, looked at me deadpan in the face, no problem whatsoever. Wow. So 20 pounds in a week apparently isn't a big deal to these guys, but it seems a big, I wish I could lose 20 pounds in a week. I'd look like you, B.E.
Oh. Thank you, buddy. I like that.
So I don't expect problems with the weigh-ins whatsoever, but I will tell you that, you know, in Conor's past fights, he's displayed all his power at 145 against guys that like Seaver, Mendez, guys that are shorter, lighter guys where he had size and reach. And in this fight at 155, he's going to be in against a guy that's going to be a much bigger man, taller man, thicker man than him. Obviously brings a different fight style. And in McGregor's fights against bigger men, which we only have to go by is Eddie Alvarez and Nate Diaz, he didn't struggle against Eddie Alvarez, but he did struggle against Diaz's size, and his power wasn't as profuse. Let's also remember that Conor McGregor has not fought in the octagon in 2 years. So as savant-like as he is, as revolutionary a fighter, a stand-up fighter as he is, there has to be some question about what that 2 years away from the octagon has included. Listen, if he had not made $100 million a year ago, you know, then maybe I could believe that he's training and working hard and been in the gym. And while I do believe that he has been training and working hard and in the gym, $100 million means you're flying in Lear jets, you're drinking champagne, you're wearing custom suits, you're opening up your own custom brand of liquor to roll out the night of the fight. There are distractions in McGregor's life, in my opinion, and that doesn't set up well for a world championship fighter. There's no question in my mind McGregor is a savvy, astute, and maybe one of the finest businessmen slash sports superstars ever created. But I don't know if his business acumen translates into the octagon on Saturday night against a guy whose life is all about fighting.
Yeah, Habib didn't want to do that shot with him at the first presser, did he?
Well, Habib is a Muslim and doesn't drink.
Of course.
So there was no way he was going to do that. And quite honestly, Brian, think about, you're not as old as me, but I've been around the fight game for 45 years since I was a kid watching Frazier Ali 1. And when you take a kid that has nothing but talent, superstar type, unique generational talent, and that kid comes from a disadvantaged upbringing, you, in a short amount of time, 2-3 years, take him from nothing to superstardom, the amount of fame, notoriety, immediate riches, and all that comes with it corrupts that fighter in every single case through history, except for maybe Muhammad Ali. And so McGregor is showing all the signs, especially breaking out his Irish whiskey and offering it to Nurmagomedov at that press conference and McGregor was slugging the stuff. I love the guy. He's colorful, but his shtick is old. I think all his mental warfare has done has created more focus in Nurmagomedov. And I really believe that Conor has about a 5-minute window to go in there and try and get something done early, because after 5 minutes, I think this is going to be like a lion playing with a puppy dog. And I think Nurmagomedov is going to stretch this fight out. And I think he's going to want to embarrass and make McGregor quit. And I fully expect that's exactly what's going to happen.
Oh, my gosh. If he just has him down, bloodied and beaten, and is literally like he was doing with Michael Johnson. And let me be clear here. No disrespect meant to the menace. I mean, Michael Johnson can fight. And he had him down, and he was talking shit to Dana and to Michael, and maybe even Michael's corner. And if he does that to Conor, that is just going to be like the third, fourth, and fifth rounds. That's just going to be 15 minutes of joy for everyone. And look, I loved Conor at first. I really don't like when people like get all into their money and want to talk about their money. And like, even with the build up to the Nate rematch and the first one, you know, Nate had beat his ass. So, and all he wanted to talk about was money. I mean, come on, talk about the ass beating you just got from Nate. And so anyway, I think a good bit of us would just love to see Conor take a brutal ass beating. And that's what I think both of us see coming. Now, I want to read to you, and you may have already read this because I'm pretty sure you're a pretty good big fan of Brett Okamoto and his work. And he got a bunch of quotes from former opponents of both guys. And you know Jason Floyd. I mean, you know, he was on with us last week, and with RadioInfluence.com, we have a deal with them. So we work with Jason, and Jason has, and I'm not saying he's stupid for it. I mean, Conor can talk you into believing he's going to win a fight. And he has talked Jason into thinking that Connor is going to win. And he was saying something about Khabib's suspect chin last week. And I was like, well, wait a second. I know that Michael Johnson kind of buckled him briefly. But, you know, when else have strikes, you know, and he kind of said, and I did not watch the Iaquinta fight. Still haven't watched it. And I have Fight Pass. I can go watch it. But this is what Michael Johnson said. This is a quote from him regarding that. People talk about the left hand I landed, but I never really thought I hurt him as bad as everyone thought I did. You see different things when you're in the cage, and I didn't see Khabib getting hurt. I remember him taking a good punch. That wasn't my best left hand because, again, my hips were back, and I didn't step in with a lot of power because I was worried about the takedown. Now, previous to that, Johnson had also said some things that, you know, made him think he would do much better in a rematch. But, you know, he was also kind of downgrading and saying in a deprecating sort of way to himself that, no, I mean, I might have buckled him a little bit, but I didn't really think I hurt him. So what do you say to those that question whether Khabib has taken many good punches? And, I mean, I guess you could look at his resume and say, maybe not a ton of, you know, heavy hitters like Connor. Any thoughts there?
Yeah, strong thoughts. First of all, Jason Floyd is an acquaintance, and I respect his work. And we share information on occasion, so I respect his opinion. What I would say to those people is, first of all, let's address Al Iaquinta. First, he's fighting Ferguson. Okay, and then a month out from Ferguson, Ferguson gets hurt, and so now Max Holloway, about 2 weeks before the fight, steps in like a champion, and he can't make weight, and he gets pulled from the fight, and so now Nurmagomedov is facing, on a week's notice, Al Iaquinta, and he had no time to prepare.
Now it's more like 20. It was more like 30. It was more like 36 hours notice, if that, wasn't it?
He looked bad.
Yeah.
He looked bad. He looked awkward. Al Iaquinta had the showing of his life. Oh, by the way, Al Iaquinta fights for Ray Longo, who's one of the best cornermen in MMA. And it was a perfect storm for Nurmagomedov to look bad, but he still completely beat the bejeebies out of a tough guy in Al Iaquinta. So I disregard the awkwardness of Al Iaquinta. I'll also say that Michael Johnson, Edson Barbosa, Rafael Dos Anjos, nowhere on Connor's resume is one fighter the capability of those three guys. Okay, throw Johnson out. Edson Barbosa is a top five 155er. Nope. Rafael Dos Anjos is the next title holder at 155. These are not bums. And Nurmagomedov, in each case, unrelentingly pursued them and drove them into the mat. So I think those that feel that Connor can strike and hurt Nurmagomedov, I do think there's a window there, because I do recognize Connor's striking ability as special. His speed is special. His precision and his manipulation of movement and creating angles is unlike we've ever seen. And so there is a window that he can be effective, and that will be greatly enhanced if Nurmagomedov goes in there with no IQ and rushes into him to try and get inside recklessly. However, I think Nurmagomedov, who walks around at 85, and oh, by the way, who are his training partners? Dan Cormier, the current heavyweight champion and light heavyweight champion. Cain Velasquez, the ex-heavyweight champion. And Luke Rockhold, a middleweight fighter. Those guys are who 155-pound Khabib trains with. And if you look at quotes from them or articles of what they say, he takes those guys down and keeps them on the mat. I also believe that Dan Cormier has power in his punch, and Nurmagomedov has taken punches from these guys too. So the fact that people think Nurmagomedov hasn't taken a punch, and he's been in there with Dos Anjos and Barboza, and he trains in the gym that he does, I think that's just unresearched, and I think it's false.
I concur completely, and I read some quotes from Rockhold the other day about how difficult it is training with Habib, and in the same quote or comment, he basically said, and there's not another 155er in the world that I won't just relentlessly just dominate in wrestling, grappling, etc. Okay, so we know where Lou stands, and I concur. I'm rolling with Habib. We both think we should be, well, he's locked in at minus 160, but he's looking to get more at a cheaper price. Let's go to the co-main event. I got a little bit on the under 2.5, which is, I got a small plus money for Pettis and Ferguson in the co-main earlier in the week. It looks like it's even money for under 2.5 rounds now. I also have some small change. I'm looking to get some small change on Ferguson inside the distance at a small plus. Not big plays by any mean. It is a three rounder, and Ferguson is coming off a pretty bad injury. But I think Ferguson is better everywhere, assuming he is close to 100% healthy. Ferguson on the straight price right now, minus 350 or even higher. Showtime, you can get about a plus 285. Ish comeback, and plus 310 is the best dog return at five dimes. Our man Gam Lou, who you should follow on Twitter at Gam Lou, and check out his website gamblu.com, gamblou.com, is going to break down the co-main event right now.
Yeah, I'll have less to say about this. I mean, you know, Pettis has been around a long time, and the funny thing is, you know, you think
he's 4 years younger. I couldn't believe it, Lou, when I was looking at it. I was like, how is Pettis 4 years younger?
Well, I think he's, I got it at two. I got Ferguson at 34 and Pettis at 31, but be that as it may, Ferguson is a really dynamic fighter. And you said it yourself, provided he comes back from this knee, and I'm of the opinion, and I don't know exactly what it was in his knee that he had done, but 5 months for a little cartilage scope or something is one thing, but he had a big zipper on that knee.
Yeah.
And he's moving great, and at 33 years old, that's why if I'm Pettis, first thing I'm doing is kicking at that leg, and Pettis does have a kick game. But I see this fight as you've bet it, Brian. I think Pettis is overmatched in this fight. He looked really good in an upset of Michael Chiesa, his last fight. I don't, and the circles that I trust, we don't regard Chiesa as, you know, a top 15 talent. And so while Pettis looked good against Chiesa, he's stepping in with a killer here in Ferguson, and Ferguson is out to prove that he should be the champion. I think Pettis is catching Ferguson at a really bad time, and I like your bets on this fight.
You are correct. Ferguson 34 and Pettis 31. I was off by a year, 3 year gap there. Okay, what I mean, I don't want to just get you breaking down where do you have interest? I mean, I always worry about the Black Beast is back, but man, although he's had some so-so performances, particularly his last time out when all he did was cash like a plus 300 ticket for Harbo and I a piece, even though that was one of the worst fights I've ever seen. But D. Lewis is 8-1 in his last nine. He is 4-1 his last five as a dog. I know Volkov is 4-0 in the UFC, but back spasms or no back spasms, I think it's worth a shot with the Black Beast. if there's a prop to for the fight end in round one between Reyes and OSP, I'm not against that. I might give some thought to OSP as a big dog. And that's about all I'm looking at, really, on the card. I got a whole big old day of college football to keep my gambling and bets entertaining me, Gamlu. Where are you looking? Go any fight, any picks you want, or disagree with my thoughts there, or agree, whatever you got.
Well, I do want to comment on OSP and Dominic Reyes, which I think is going to be a great fight. OSP is awkward, talented, and experienced, and Reyes is lethal and inexperienced. I think Reyes gets some experience. I think this is a fight that I have targeted. It's a heavy lean now. I want to watch weigh-ins. Over 1.5 is plus 140. I do not think Reyes is just going to go out there and ice St. Preux. St. Preux is awkward and moves weird, and he's got a funny style, and he's tough. And I really like Reyes to have to struggle in this fight and or OSP to even be competitive. And for that reason, I plus 140 on the over 1.5, I'm salivating over that. I just want to kind of watch the weigh-ins and make sure nothing goofy happens. Volkov and the Black Beast, I think Volkov should probably be, I think he's more durable. He should probably be a little bit of a favorite. Derek Lewis in articles has come out and said that he's going to throw down for 5 minutes, and then if he runs out of gas, the fans can get upset with him, but he's going to come out and try and put on a show. And if that's the case, it makes me like Volkov a little bit more, maybe inside the distance, because if Lewis can't get him out, he's going to be a sitting duck, and Volkov is a big, long, tall, angular guy that's going to have a little bit of reach with legs and arms over Lewis. Now, those are the two fights I wanted to comment on because you brought those up. Here are two underdogs that I'm looking at in the card that, again, pending weigh-ins, and I say that because these Brazilians have a tendency, and I blame the Brazilians a lot, but a lot of times, and it's happened with Darren Till, a cheating Englishman, I don't mind saying. You know, the penalty to come in 8 pounds over is you give up some of your purse, but you have such a huge advantage, especially if you're a striker and you're trying not to get taken down against a wrestler. All you got to do is show up 8 pounds heavy and you give up, you give up some of your purse, 20-30% to the other guy, but you have such a dynamic advantage and there's no repercussion outside the purse penalty, and the UFC has to get that fixed. And the reason I say that is because I'm going down to the first fight on the undercard where a guy named Alan Patrick, a Brazilian, is going to ship in and fight Scott Holtzman. Holtzman, I mentioned earlier, he fights here at the MMA lab. And each Saturday I go up there and I get training from those guys. No, Uncle Louie isn't getting in his gym shorts and getting in there in the octagon. I stand on the outside of the octagon next to the coaches of the MMA lab as they bark instructions to the people that are in the cage. And it allows me to understand what underhooks are and why you use them and how you get off the mat by pressing your back against the fence and working your way up. And the nuances that an old saddle like me gets by being able to go there and listen to these coaches and fighters interact is priceless. And from that, what I've determined is that Holtzman, though a limited athletic fighter, is gritty. He's tough, and I've watched him work out, and I know that he is prepared to give the absolute best effort of his career on Saturday night. Holtzman has been in with Josh Emmett, and if you remember, Josh Emmett brutally knocked out
The bully, not Maynard, the other Lamas, bully, Ricardo
Lamas, and looked really well until he, in fact, got iced by Jeremy Stevens.
Yes.
Now, Holtzman fought Emmett tooth and nail, and so I will tell you that Holtzman's past competition has prepared him well for this fight. Alan Patrick is going to have a little bit of size on Holtzman. He's going to be 2 inches taller. He's going to have a 3-inch reach advantage, and he's a lefty, so he's going to pose some unique problems. But Alan Patrick has not fought the level of competition Holtzman has. He's fought the last 2 or 3 fights in Brazil, and he's recently had, prior to his last fight, he took 2 years off. In my experience, I don't think Patrick is going to ship well. As long as he makes weight fair and square, it's my opinion that Holtzman's going to bully him. And after 5 minutes, Patrick being kind of a front runner, I think Holtzman is going to have his way with him, provided he can get through that first round. And Holtzman currently, anywhere you look, is from plus 205 to plus 220. When I can find an underdog prepared to give his absolute best effort, I look really hard. I've watched this kid train, and I'm gonna again, provided Patrick doesn't show up, because he's the ground fighter, and he doesn't show up 8 pounds overweight for this thing. If they both make the 155-pound level, Holtzman will be a fighter that I'm looking at. And the other dog that I like, and we're going to start to talk about the other Pettis brother now, Sergio Pettis. Sergio Pettis and Justin Formiga are going to fight at flyweight 125. And Sergio's been on a decent upswing in his career. He's primarily a striker that needs to stay on his feet. And it's interesting because this is very similar to the main event in that Formiga, the Brazilian, really has to get this fight to the floor for him to hold any kind of advantage. Formiga will be outclassed on his feet against Pettis, and Pettis cannot let this fight go to the floor, because if he does, he won't get up, at least until gets submitted or the end of the round rings. Formiga is considerably older than Pettis, which is a disadvantage, but I think Pettis has been kind of gifted a couple of decent spots here, and Formiga's a very bad match for him. You can catch Formiga, and again, pending these weigh-ins. Now, if it happened that Formiga missed weight, I would not hesitate to take him if he was the one that missed weight. But I hope that they don't, because it's clear cheating. You can find Formiga anywhere from plus 135 to 140 at Five Dimes right now. And I think that's a very, very good, positive price, value price on a guy that arguably I see that fight way closer to a pick.
His name is Gamlu. He likes Habib, but he thinks you should be patient and wait for a better price. But, you know, if a minus 150 or so presents itself, he's good with that. He likes Scott Holtzman as a lucrative pup in the plus 210, plus 220 at Five Dimes. And he's going to fade Showtime's baby bro with Formiga at plus 130-ish. In a lot of spots, get plus 140 at Five Dimes. So while you are breaking those down, Lou, I just, you know, checked my Twitter, and Connor was late to the presser, and after 15 minutes, Habib said, "This is big disrespect. I don't wait for nobody." And he got out and he left. So there's that. No shocker, I'm sure.
Connor's shtick is getting old.
Yep.
And to me, it's more a tell of his own nerves, because, hey, if he's been in the gym and he's ready to go and everything's right, then, you know, he can come off as calm as he wants. But eventually, in another 48 hours, they're going to shut a metal door behind him.
Mm-hmm.
And he's going to be in there with this Russian, who I believe is only getting more focused and more driven by these antics of McGregor. I believe the Russian has anticipated all these, you know, sophomoric moves by McGregor, and I think he's half prepared for it. And again, you know, it's the fight game and anything can happen here. But I really look forward to this fight. This is a fight I like. And the last thing I'll say is, as I handicap this fight, I believe Nurmagomedov is a solid 2-1 favorite here. And that's why I jumped at the 160. Sometimes when you see your price and it's good, take it. Because there's been many a times when I've seen a price I like and I want to get greedier. I want just another nickel, just another dime. And then, you know, 6 hours later, I wake up and look at the price and it's moved and I have lost all my advantage. So I've learned that when my price is acceptable, take it. That's why I grabbed the 160. I would caution your people that that could happen to them, but I would also say that I expect this line to compress in the next 48 hours. Just watch it close and make whatever decision you deem best for your own gambling, you know, wallets.
Great stuff as always from Gamblou. Follow him on Twitter at GAMBLOU and check out his website, gamblou.com. I will see you in Las Vegas in 3 weeks. Bets, ball games, pigskin, a little widespread panic. Imagine there might be a few beers in there. Little this, little that. My man, can't wait to see you in 3 weeks. And go Habib.
Sounds great, Brian. Thanks. I sure appreciate the time. You and Harbo do a great job on the pod, and good luck to everybody.
Thanks, buddy. All right, we'll talk to you soon, my man. All right, Gamblou, breaking it down. He likes Holtzman as a dog. He likes Formiga as a dog. He likes Habib in the headliner as a favorite. Seemed like he was agreeing with my opinions on under and Tony Ferguson inside the distance. You're listening to the Games Galore Pod 52. When we return, Smoking Dave Koken makes his Games Galore debut. You don't want to miss it. And for you, those frustrated by all the UFC chat, it's nothing but pigskin the rest of the way. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Games Galore 52. We had Gamblou on with us breaking down the UFC fight earlier. And now it's our pleasure to welcome Dave Koken, who is a sports radio titan in Las Vegas and has been so for decades. He is the host of the Las Vegas Sports Line show from 2 to 3 p.m. every day Pacific on ESPN Radio Las Vegas. Check out his website, smokingkoken.com. Leave the G off the end of smoking. And it's at Dave Koken on Twitter, and that's C-O-K-I-N. We've tried to get him on before, but because of his show, we've had some time conflicts, but we worked it out, and I'm stoked to have you on, Dave. What's going on, my man?
Kind of busy out here in Las Vegas this weekend. I know you had Gamblou on to talk about UFC 229, which is going to be a massive betting event, and then we've got the Golden Knights swinging back into action tonight as we're taping this, their first home game of the season. And obviously, NFL and college football are always huge out here. Baseball playoff games. It's about as good a time to be a sports bettor as you could possibly ask for.
Yeah, I mean, there's not enough time in the day, and I'm sure you got a bunch of hot Irish hooligans coming into town. Let's get to the college football card. And Dave is as sharp as it gets when it comes to college football. Just because, you know, I'm a Gator, and I really think that this LSU game is a toss-up. I think that Felipe Franks is more likely to make a crucial mistake. I like Joe Burrow, regardless of what seems like a lot of national criticism he's gotten. All he is undefeated and hasn't thrown an interception for a team that he just joined like 8 weeks ago. And Florida, well, let's remember that when they gave up 300 yards rushing to Kentucky, C.C. Jefferson and David Reese were not playing, and all of a sudden, Jabari Zuniga and Ja'Kai Polite are all up in the opposing quarterback's program, coming off of both defensive end positions. I think it's a low-scoring game, but I'm really not prone to play unders in college football in the low 40s. You know, I got my pride and heart in this one, and I think it's a toss-up. I really do. So I would love to hear a real sharp opinion on what you think about LSU at the Swamp in about 48 hours or less than that.
Well, you know, before I say what I think, we know what the sharp market is thinking, because this line has moved today, and the money is showing on Florida, and I think there's now a possibility the Gators actually could go up as a favorite in this game, which is interesting because my number on the game, like most of us, I power rate my own games. We all have our own ways of amassing these power ratings, and I actually had made Florida minus one, so it wasn't a game I was likely to play anyway. It wasn't like a major differential or anything like that, but I did have Florida slightly favored, even though LSU was the favorite on the betting line. That said, the problem I have with Florida is, see, this is a game where my numbers and my opinion are in conflict with each other, because I think LSU, my numbers say Florida, my opinion says LSU. I'm not putting a whole lot into the Gators' win last week. It was a nice win, but Mississippi State's already been exposed thanks to Kentucky. And I still have the same worries you do about Frank. Look, he'll look good for a certain period of time, and then he'll be really late on a throw. And when you're late on a throw, that's when you get intercepted. And I just get the impression that someplace in this game, on one or two occasions, he's going to be late with a throw, and against a defense as good as LSU's, they're going to pick him off and maybe even take him on a pick six. The flip side of it is LSU, they're not flashy. I'm not a big Burrow guy, but he's got making mistakes. The team doesn't turn the football over much. I just think LSU's going to make less mistakes. So it's a game, I don't like playing against my own numbers, so I won't. But if I had to bet the game, I would take LSU.
I made LSU 2 and 46.5. No need to, like, if you just don't have opinion, we can move on to other stuff. Any thoughts on the total? I mean, I think it'll be low scoring, but I just don't play unders low 40s. How about you?
It's exactly the same thought process. And I already got burned once playing an under. Game ended up a whole bunch of points right at the end with a defensive score. It is really tough to play unders in college football right now, with the rules being what they are. And, you know, unless you want to take a shot at some game that's 70, and you think there's going to be two stops, maybe then you look at an under. But, I'm more of a five guy than a totals guy anyway. And this year is convincing me why. I think I've only played like two totals, and I went 1-1. I might not play anymore.
Missouri at South Carolina. Bentley, Muschamp says he's probable. South Carolina's minus two. Brian, Mama can't spell Edwards. She put an I in it. The stud wide receiver, he's also probable, but both guys got dinged up last week. This is the second highest total that South Carolina has had since Muschamp got there. The only one they've had over or above or higher than 58 on a over-under was 71 at Missouri last year. And South Carolina won 31-13, 44 combined points. The last 2 years with a Muschamp defensive game plan, Drew Locke has thrown two touchdowns compared to four interceptions. He only completed 14 of 32 throws against the Gamecocks last year. This is the second highest total in a three-year stretch under Muschamp, and it's the second highest by 6 points. With the iffiness of Bentley and Brian Edwards, not me, Mama can't spell Edwards, with their iffiness, with their injuries, I mean, even if they try to go, whether they can make it the whole game, I think you got to downgrade South Carolina's offense a little. And with Locke's struggles against Missouri, I think we're and you know what? I don't know that I've played an under in college football yet this year, but I am playing one this week with under 64 Missouri, South Carolina. No need to address the total if you don't have any thoughts. Address either team or the game, or if you want to go off on a tangent toward a different SEC team or game, feel free.
I want to talk about this game because, you know, if you go back to the early numbers, preseason look aheads.
Right.
This line is quite a bit off what it would have been back then. And the reason is South Carolina right now is an absolute flop. This is a team that a lot of people thought was ready to make a real move, maybe not to get to the level of, you know, the absolute elite in the SEC. We know who those are. But the best of the rest. And it's not happening. They have not looked good so far. The quarterback is going backwards. The injury or not, he hasn't played well. So I don't know how much they even lose with Bentley at this point. And Missouri's got all kinds of momentum going. Odom has pushed the right buttons for a guy who was really on the hot seat going into last season. You can forget about that now. I mean, sign a good extension. This program is really back on its feet right now. And they're kind of a scary team. I mean, Drew Locke continues to get better. He's the guy who at this point is probably number two among all quarterbacks as far as those eligible for the NFL draft. Probably number two.
You putting Herbert ahead of him, Dave, from Oregon? I'm just curious which guy.
I'm not that good at quarterback rankings as far as NFL draft, so I don't even bother with them particularly. But based on what I've read, Herbert looks like a consensus number one right now. Locke looks like a consensus number two. Now, I will say this. From a physical standpoint, Locke is what NFL teams love because he's huge. He's got a big arm. He's mobile. That's the kind of guy that gets drafted number one overall. And so I can see a game like this pushing Locke's stock further. I think it's a big game for him. I like the way Missouri's playing right now. Don't know if it'll make my card, but I'm definitely leaning to the Tigers here.
Yeah, and I think we talked about this on your show when you had me on as a guest the other day. Like, I mean, Locke, just when you see him throw, and I was saying how when he was struggling, I mean, his stats were awful as a true freshman, but man, he's so tall. His arm is so powerful. Yeah. You're just like, damn, this dude's got all the talent in the world. And
he can move, too.
Yeah, yeah, he can. So that's an interesting one.
I'll tell you,
go ahead.
You know what he reminds me of? And it's just going back a ways. If you look at him now, he's not the same guy. But he reminds me of Ben Roethlisberger when Roethlisberger was playing in the MAC at Miami. Big,
yeah,
strong arm, surprising mobility. And Roethlisberger in his last year went from being a guy who was, you know, maybe he'll be able to play to a really big-time prospect. I think Locke's following that same path, 15 years later.
Dave Koken is our guest, making his belated Games Galore debut, but only on account of the fact we just have not been able to get a proper time slot with all his shows in Vegas and whatnot. All right, let's talk Syracuse, because this, you know, it's definitely red flag with the letdown scenario. I think it would be more red flag had they won last week. And I think the odds makers have taken into account the potential flat, letdown, whatever you want to call it, for the Cuse after just giving Clemson fans just all they could handle in terms of their stress last Saturday afternoon. I am going to ignore the red flags, and I'm going to play Syracuse this week. Is that a game you threw out because of the letdown situation? No. Go ahead, Dave. Just the floor is yours.
No, I actually was considering Pittsburgh here. I am not now for two reasons. One, I didn't play it in time. And the sharp money is poured in on the Pittsburgh side and drove the line down to 3. Now, it might start to go back up because there's an injury on the Pittsburgh side that could be of some significance. I don't even know if it's hit the wire yet, but I got that info this morning. They're going to be missing one of the key guys. And I think this line will start to tick back up. So my suggestion, is if you like Syracuse, you better grab it now because I think -3 is the best you're going to get. And if you like Pittsburgh, well, you kind of missed the boat. Look, this is my own philosophy, and sometimes it costs me winners. Last week was a perfect example. I liked San Jose State against Hawaii, but I didn't pull the trigger. And I just refused to do so later in the week at, you know, 2 to 3 points, the worst of it on the number. I could have gotten 13, and now I got to take 9. I'm not going to do that. Now, game one, easy cover for San Jose, but I that's the way I play. And believe me, over the long haul, if you don't play beat-up numbers, you do much better. So that's my advice on this game, is if you like Syracuse, take it now. If you like Pittsburgh, pass or wait for the number to go back up. I think the spot favors Pittsburgh. I do think Syracuse, I'm not so much in a mental letdown. Those are tough to read. That was one physical battle last year against Clemson, though. Yeah, I mean, it was those two teams beat each other up in that game. I think Clemson's real happy they've got a softie this week. It's a tougher spot for Syracuse, in my opinion. The problem, and why I didn't play it right away, I don't think much of this Pittsburgh team, and they have yet, despite having a really good defensive guy as their head coach, their defense kind of stinks. And Dino Babers finds a way to put points on the board no matter what the opponent is. So, you know, I think it's a spot where from a handicapping 1-on-1 standpoint, you probably look at at Pittsburgh, but the eye test still says Syracuse.
Yeah, no doubt. And I think Dino Babers is one of the more underrated coaches in America. When I was dying, when I was dying for Jim McElwain to get gone last year, early October, and Dino beat Clemson. I mean, I had Dino in my top five of my, you know, if I were the Florida AD, and if I had been instead of Jeremy Foley the last decade or so, things would be a lot better in Gainesville. But anyone could have done that. So, well, you talk about Clemson there. Any thoughts on Ed Wake? I know Wake's been kind of decimated by injuries, not necessarily any new ones, like ones they've had since mid-September. I'm going to first guess Dabo here. I do not think he should play Trevor Lawrence this week. I know they're trying to, like, make it out as if it's a neck injury. That dude got seriously concussed.
Yeah, he sure did.
And they've got an open date next week, Dave. I'm first guessing him. He should not play Trevor Lawrence this week. And when he does, if he gets popped and he gets another concussion, he's going to be iffy the rest of the season. I'm first guessing him. They can win this game with the kid they had last week, the third stringer, or now that Kelly Bryant's gone. They can win this game without Trevor Lawrence, and then they have an open date. I'm first guessing him. Your thoughts?
I wouldn't play him either. You could be, well, you know, Wake Forest is, they're not exactly at full strength, and they're not very good. I mean, you know, I think Clawson's done some great, Clawson's done a great job there in making that program respectable, but there's a ceiling for Wake Forest, as opposed to other programs. And yeah, I know it's a big rivalry for them and their chance to have a, you know, a huge upset and everything, but from Clemson, I don't think I'm taking any chances here. I know they want to get Lawrence reps because he's a young player and you want to have him get as much experience as possible for the big games that are coming up. But, and look, I'm not there. So maybe he's fine. But, boy, he took some licks last week. And I agree that there, I don't know about that being a neck injury. But I guess if he's cleared, go ahead and send him out there for a while. I know one thing, I wouldn't have him out there in the second half if this game is what I think it could be at the half.
No doubt. So, Dave, I'm just going to throw out multiple games at you, and whichever ones you want to talk about, you tackle. And you tackle them one at a time or together, whatever you want to do. Vanderbilt at Georgia 27-ish. We've got Northwestern at Michigan State. I think Michigan State's been a real disappointment this year.
They are. Yeah. I agree completely. And Northwestern is such a gritty team. You know, they looked like, and I didn't play the game, so it didn't bother me, but it looked like last week they should have gotten killed by Michigan. And, you know, they almost won the game. They couldn't hold the lead. Michigan State just has not gotten it together this year. And even last week, You know, it's, I know D'Antonio doesn't have killer instinct. He never has. But it's 31-3. And you just take the fourth quarter off and let, you know, end up losing by losing on the spread. That was like Michigan State needs to put that team away, put 60 minutes on the board and beat somebody by 40. And the fact that they couldn't do it against Central Michigan, which is really bad this year, Northwestern's just gritty enough to hang around and cover this number.
Yeah, I mean, Michigan State hasn't put anybody to bed yet. Certainly not Utah State. And
Utah State's a pretty good football team. So
right.
I'll give them that one. But they were really bad against Arizona State. And I don't, and that's not meant to insult Arizona State, because Herm Edwards is doing a nice job. But they sucked in that game. And they just haven't had a good performance yet.
Dave, just curious, because I felt I was all alone on an island when I gave the thumbs up to the Herm Edwards hire. What did you think of it initially?
I didn't think anything of it. I thought that the immediate criticism was, why?
Ridiculous.
Because he hasn't coached college football in a long time? All right. I know one thing. You want a coach who's going to motivate a team on a weekly basis. I'll take Herm Edwards right there with anybody. He's got some veteran people around him on the staff. That team's pretty good.
Yeah.
And that's a really good game. That's one of the, that might be one of the best games this weekend, is Arizona State at Colorado. And for what it's worth, I think ASU has a good chance to go in and knock off the Buffaloes.
Yeah, I thought the national criticism on that was so just way off base and really pathetic.
You know what it is? You know what it is, Brian? He's kind of corny. He is. I mean, Herm isn't cool. He comes up with these cornball expressions and everybody makes fun of him because of it. But this guy knows how to sell. He really does. He is a massive motivator. And you can see the difference. I mean, this is a completely different, from the neck up, completely different Arizona State team from last year. And it's a completely different in a good way.
Yeah, I get it when you say the corny stuff, but there's also that, like, if you're just kind of in the mood for thinking and talking about football, there were times when he would be doing one of his ESPN rants, and I'm just at my computer working, but I'm listening to him. Sometimes I would get chill bumps. Like, he can motivate and get you fired up big time, and you know he is a class act, can communicate, recruit, etc. I thought it was ridiculous, all the criticism when he got hired. A&M, Kentucky. What do you think of the?
That's an interesting game.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be interesting.
Kentucky's got a real.
Go ahead.
I think Kentucky's got a real chance to go in and get him.
Sure.
They've got tremendous confidence right now, and I'm telling you what, that running back is playing at the next level. The quarterback isn't, but as long he's the guy, Wilson, right?
Yeah, Terry Wilson and Benny Snell.
Don't screw the game up. Yeah, Snell's fantastic.
Yeah.
Wilson's, I put him in the game manager category. The rest of the team is good enough to win as long as he doesn't screw it up. So just go out there and manage the football game, play defense, and do as much ball control as you can on offense. I think they can go in and beat Texas A&M. And that's a game I haven't played it yet, but I am considering the Wildcats there.
I'm very interested to see how Kentucky will play in terms of this week in College Station, but when they fall behind, because now Terry Wilson looked very good against Florida. He hit some deep throws. He's fast as hell. He can scramble big time, but they've
accurate though.
Right. They've never had to put a lot of pressure on him, so we'll see if they get behind what will happen to them. But as long as they're playing a one-possession game or in front, they're looking pretty good. Let's go to Maryland at Michigan. Maryland's had 2 weeks to prepare for Michigan. I don't know what the hell happened to Maryland in the Temple game. But other than that, I mean, they've looked – they beat Texas. They routed Minnesota. They dominated. I know Bowling Green's horrible, but they were not playing well in the first half, came out flat and just dominated them the second half. And I don't know what happened to Temple in the Temple game. Michigan clearly is not clicking on all cylinders. Maryland's had 2 weeks to prepare, and they're catching two touchdowns, a field goal, and a hook. I lean Maryland. I haven't pulled the trigger. Any thoughts there?
Not really, because I can't figure out Michigan, so I've just decided I'll leave them alone. At this point, I know the talent's there. They're a top 10 team on paper. They just are. They're a top 10 team on paper. They have not been a top 10 team on the field. And it you can make a case to go against them because they are not playing up to their potential. But there's also that nagging thought that, boy, the week they put it together, they are going to beat the living snot out of somebody. And it could be Maryland. We'll see.
How are we doing on time, Dave? Are we good to keep you another 5:10?
Five minutes more, yes.
Okay. All right. Follow him at Dave Kokin. That's C-O-K-I-N. And you can check out smokingkokin.com. You can get all his picks at vegasinsider.com and smokingkokin.com. Oklahoma, Texas. What you thinking, Dave?
Well, look, I think everybody knows the stats now on Tom Herman as an underdog, as a head coach and both as a head coach and as an offensive coordinator. Don't lay points to Tom Herman, so I won't. Texas is getting better by the week. They are starting to look like the old Longhorns of old, a power team in a power conference. And this just has the makings of being a classic. I mean, this is a really good rivalry battle between two high-level teams. Oklahoma's a little bit better, but I don't know if this looks better. And this is going to be a pros versus Joes. The sharp money's going to be on Texas. The squares are going to bet Oklahoma. I would lean to the pro side here. I think the Longhorns at plus 7 or better are very playable.
I think I mentioned on your show how I've been wanting Stanford to open up the offense. And if Bryce Love is unable to go, maybe we'll finally see that. Do you have any opinion on Utah Stanford? I just think Utah is really bad offensively. Go ahead.
Yeah, boy, Utah is a big disappointment. I think a lot of people who know the Pac-12 know very well thought this team was going to be in line to do something big this year, and it hasn't happened for them. I don't know about Stanford's mindset here, though, because, you know, they went into South Bend last week, and they went in as a playoff contender, and they left as a nothing. They're out. They can win the Pac-12 championship still, but they have a 0% chance to make the playoffs now. They don't like playing on teams off a game where they get eliminated from the playoffs. I don't care how much their coach sells them or tries to sell them on, hey, our season's not over as far as that goes. You might get away with it at a school with a bunch of dummies, but there's no dummies on the Stanford team. They know they're done as far as the playoffs are concerned, and I think that makes them vulnerable here against the Utah team. It's basically playing for 12 seasons.
Interesting. Let's see. Any other games? Any other stories, sleeper stories, surprising teams? Any teams you've been going against that you want to keep going against? Any nuggets for our listeners?
I'll throw one out. And actually, the line's dropping on this game. It went up. Florida Atlantic got off a terrible loss last week where they blew a 21-3 lead at Middle Tennessee, and then lost what amounted to a Hail Mary two-point conversion, if there's such a thing. It was. There were a couple of really bad calls in that game that went against Florida Atlantic. Kiffin says, we've gone through the process, and we put that behind them. Whether they have or not, we'll wait and see. I thought he might change quarterbacks this week, but it looks like it's still going to be Robeson under center, but I think it's going to be a short leash for him because he really hasn't played that well. Florida Atlantic has been a big flop so far this season, starting with that disaster against Oklahoma, and it's just continued for them. They didn't, you know, they got run over by Central Florida, and they lose to a team they're not supposed to lose to last week. And now they've got this Old Dominion team. Well, this might be where Old Dominion's tank runs a little bit empty because they have been involved in a couple of crazy games. The phenomenal upset against Virginia Tech. And then last week, interestingly enough, they also got screwed by the officials in their loss to East Carolina. In fact, Conference USA even came out after the game and said, yeah, they got it wrong. So both teams are in really unusual situations of losing games they should have won, if not for officials. I'm just going to go to the talent here, and I think Florida Atlantic's got more of it than Old Dominion, and I like the spot here. I do think at some point Old Dominion, their mental tank has to empty, and we know what Florida Atlantic was capable of going into the season. This number's dropped below 14 at 13.5 now. I think you go with the Owls here. This is a spot where Florida Atlantic might get healthy.
Yeah, and they are winless against the spread for our purposes after being an ATS juggernaut late last year. Dave, man, we appreciate your time. I want our listeners to follow. He's a must-follow on Twitter if you like sports gambling, at Dave Kokin, which is spelled C-O-K-I-N. You can check out his show, The LV Sports Line, on ESPN Radio in Las Vegas from 2 to 3 Pacific, Monday through Friday, and check out his work at smokingkokin.com. You can get his picks at vegasinsider.com. I hate it took so long for us to get you on, man, but let's do it again soon. Great knowledge, great insight. Thanks as always, Dave, and we appreciate your time.
Thanks for having me, Brian.
All right, buddy. Have a good weekend. Good luck with your plays.
All right.
All right. Let's take a quick break, and then we'll come back and we'll wrap it up with a one last little farewell segment to close out Games Galore 52. Welcome back, Games Galore 52. Thanks to Gamlu. Thanks to Smokin' Dave Kokin. Thanks to you for listening. All right, I'm just going to kind of clean out the notebook with stuff I've written down throughout the week as a handicap games.
Give us what you got.
Give you what I got, etc. Might even get into some injuries. Let me give you my top 10 and my power ranks this week. No changes in the top 5. 1, Bama. 2, Georgia. 3, Ohio State. 4, Clemson. 5, Oklahoma, 6, LSU, 7, Washington, 8, Penn State, 9, Notre Dame, 10, West Virginia. Notre Dame being the big mover. Ian Book has revitalized this offense big time. And I think it's a whole new program with Notre Dame right now. A whole new program. Again, as we've discussed, the team totals over for Alabama first quarter, first half, and game remain undefeated. That's 3 per game. That's 15-0. You might have had a problem getting a team total for the first quarter last week against UL Lafayette. That's why I don't like talking about this ahead of time, because a lot of times these team totals or even first quarters or first half will not come out till late Friday for a Saturday game, or maybe not even until the morning of Saturday. So we don't know what we're going to see for Alabama minus 34.5, 35 at Arkansas. But if there is a line, if there is a line for their team total, 14 or fewer in the first quarter, that's gold over. I mean, a push at worst. And I don't give a shit what it is for halftime of the game. They score 60. They have 49 by halftime. So keep plugging along with that. Now, I don't know. Anything north of -7 in the first quarter could potentially get hairy. So I'm not necessarily recommending that, but anything minus 21 or fewer for Alabama in the first half against Arkansas is absolute gold. And it's time to start talking about this being I've talked to some odds makers in Vegas, and some have Alabama power rated higher than any team ever in college football history. I personally, with all the UFC going on and the football, I have not even been able to go read this stuff, but I'm going to when I get a chance, and I recommend you do so. Dan Wetzel, as usual, as he was for the second Aaron Hernandez murder case, as he was with that just awfulness of the Michigan State gymnast and that awful human being who's in prison now. I really can't even remember his name, and if I did, I wouldn't say it. Anywho. But anyway, what I'm getting at is Wetzel is in court. He is covering play-by-play, multiple bylines a day, this college corruption scandal, as a couple of those guys, not Chuck Person, not the Rifleman, but Gatto. It's like the Adidas, I think he's the Adidas guy, and two other co-defendants. Their trial has started. God, and I heard a wild-ass crazy rumor about this college basketball corruption case last week that I only give a 20-80 shot of being accurate, and I sure as shit am not going to say it on the air. But, oh my God, if true, only in America. I'm sorry to tease that, but sorry, I just brought up the God Chiefs corruption scandal. I had to. So I can't wait to go read Wetzel and what he's talking about there. I know he had a column on Emmert either yesterday or today, how he, you know, all of the corruption's being laid to bear in this court case, and Emmert's not even there, which shows you what a debacle the NCAA has become, especially on his watch. Okay, injuries to watch. A.J. Dillon, stud running back for BC. Game time decision. Probably the same with Bryce Lubb. As I've said, I don't care if Bryce Lubb plays or not. I think it might force David Shaw to open up the offense, set the pass up first, maybe go to J.J. Arcega-Whiteside, one of the top five wide receivers in America, maybe go to Caden Smith, the uno in terms of tight ends nationally. Fade the Bills, like the Titans this week, 1-3 in a row, Bills blow, we all know that. Gamlu and I like Habib. I probably shouldn't go Bruce Buffer, should I?
I don't know.
I've had a few beers. Do you think
I was into it.
Habib! No, now I've got to clear my throat. Okay. Talk, Carbo.
I want Habib to win. But I've got this sinking feeling he's not gonna.
Oh, I mean, Conor McGregor will talk you into jumping off a mountain, man.
No.
not jumping off a mountain, but he will talk you into him knocking somebody's teeth out. I don't think so. I'm not gonna let him do it. Habib.
I'm not gonna bet on this one. I can't.
Yeah, I mean, it is gonna be, I mean, I love the guy. Like, I love John Jones at first. And let me be clear. I don't hate McGregor like I hate John Jones.
Right.
I mean, Oscar Liar Meyer Wiener is really, he and John Jones are the only two humans on this planet that I hate.
Oscar survived that. I saw it coming, though.
Oscar Meyer Liar survived that game and survived with his job, all that. Hey, and I'm not a big guy that, oh, you know, everything comes around on you.
Yeah, I don't know.
Everything happens for a reason. Right. I don't do that bullshit.
Right, right, right.
But there is an exception.
Okay.
Oscar Liermeyer has got his coming.
It's going to get him.
Yeah. His comeuppance is coming. It might not be for another decade. And hey, I'm not saying I'm in revenge mode.
Right.
Let's remember, fuck Iowa State has never beaten me. They're 0 for life against me. I got two rings on their face. I still got confetti in my fucking hair from the multiple natties I collected on their faces. But, revenge is a dish best served cold. Not revenge, just, yeah, he's never whooped me. I just think he's a douche.
He's a wiener.
I can't wait to see him nationally. It's going to be cheating is what it's going to be. Cheating and recruiting. I think I'm ready to give you my buffer. You ready?
Yep.
Habib the Eagle.
That was pretty good. That was pretty good.
I mean, it's been like every commercial. I think I did terrible on that one, actually.
I don't know. Better than I could do.
Okay. Well, Buffer's been killing it on all these ads. I mean, every channel you're on is overflowing with UFC 229 ads. They weren't promoting it much a month out, but they are making up for it now.
Oh, for sure.
So, Harbo, I know you got daddy duties. I mean, is there no way to slip out to watch
this? I don't know. I was thinking about that. I might be able to.
But, I mean, it would be, I don't know that you can get away with, like, a three-hour extravaganza. Maybe you just have to, like, Uber to Shades to meet us, like,
right.
You leave an hour.
Just jump out the back window.
Or, like, right. Baby sleeping, mama sleep. Oh, you've got your mother, so grandma.
Mom's in town.
Grandma Rosenau's in town.
I just sneak out.
Touchdown, Troy. A minute and a half in, we got the over on Troy, Georgia State.
There you go.
We have the Patriots tonight, too, but I doubt any listeners will hear this. until the game has already kicked off. Oh, and they made the extra point. Let's go, Troy. No Golic and Wingo tomorrow. I'm happy about that, aren't I?
Oh, yeah, you get to stay up late.
Yeah. I mean, I've been going to bed at like 11 on Thursdays, waking up. I've been up.
4 a.m.
I've been up before sunrise 3 or 4 days this week. That's football season. On a good sleeping schedule.
There it is.
How's your sleeping schedule over there, Pop? All over the place.
Worse than yours.
So if I wake up at 4:30, I can text you, right?
Text me, man.
You might be up. Yeah. And I love it. Okay. What else? What else I got in these notes to share? I talked about Drew Locke not playing well against South Carolina. Bentley, on the other hand, I wonder if going to this up-tempo offense has fucked him up. And I love my boy Moss Champ. I was listening to Stanford Steve and the Bear, Chris Falica, on their pod earlier today. And I loved hearing Stanford Steve saying, there's no bigger fan of Muschamp than me, because I've felt alone and on an island supporting Muschamp for all these years. But man, every offense coordinator decision, every OC decision, and I agreed with every one he made at Florida. I liked all, well, I'm not going to say I was on board with Roper, the Duke OC that he stole from Cutcliffe, but anywho, Montgomery, the Iowa State stud running back, he's been upgraded to probable this week. Remember the Eastern Michigan road underdog numbers, although they are coming off a triple overtime game. Another red flag for Hawaii this week, 5 overtime game against San Jose State last week. There's a lot of red flags out there for a lot of games. I'm feeling like a chalk eater this week, which is never necessary. Well, I don't know. Maybe it's good. Maybe it's not. LSU Florida toss up. Yeah, man. Armani Rogers is out for UNLV indefinitely. Big loss for UNLV. 6-4 TDINT ratio, but he's got more rushing yards than Lexington Thomas. In fact, I meant to ask Dave Koken for any intel on the UNLV backup quarterback, as the Rebs are -9.5 at last look against the Bob Davies. But I've got no idea on their backup QB. Just from some notes here on my page, some guys that have been balling. Josh Allen, Kentucky, 6 sacks. I mentioned Ja'Kai Polite and Jabari Zuniga for the Gators, the defensive ends. Not a baller, but an injury note for Stanford. Senior strong safety Ben Edwards. That's my cousin. I'm kidding. He's out indefinitely. He's a multi-year starter. That's not good. When an underdog of 8 or more under Derek Mason, Vandy 9-5 against the spread with 3 outright wins, are catching 26.5 on the hedges. Of course, they won in Athens last trip 2 years ago, 2016, 17-16 game, 4th-and-1. I forget if they gave it to Chubb or Michelle. But I remember what happened. Zach Cunningham is what happened. 4th down stop, and Vandy wins outright at Georgia. That was 2 years ago. Doubt it happens this week, but I'd love it. I love me some Derek Mason. Again, like the Titans this week in NFL, I nailed it last week when I said Falcons games overs. But man, this one is just so high. That was easy pickings with the Bengals last week, as we noted on GG51. Let me see what that total's at now for Pittsburgh Atlanta. Right now it's at 58. If I had to pick it, I'd still go over. I kind of lean Carolina -6 at home against the G-men, who suck. And Odell Beckham's a clown. The Dolphins were a fraud. I think the Bungles are legit. My NFL power rankings are up on BrianEdwardsSports.com, plus updated futures. NFL and college. Look ahead lines for SEC games. In fact, I could share. How are we doing on time there, Harbo? Can I share these lines real quick?
Yeah, real quick.
He said real quick. That might mean Mama Jody might be texting. Actually, I'm just going to encourage our listeners to go to BrianEdwardsSports.com.
I think that's a great idea. Yeah, drive them there.
We've got Auburn at Georgia line. We've got Bama at LSU. We've got the Egg Bowl, the Iron Bowl. We've got the huge showdown between Georgia and LSU in Red Stick next weekend, a.k.a. Baton Rouge. Red Stick's a nickname. Joey Farolito taught me that. Gammo and the Rams did wear their Vince Ferragamo uniforms last week. All right, thanks to Gam Lou. Thanks to Harbo.
Thank you, buddy.
Thanks to Harbo baby mama Jody. And Games Lore 52 in the books. Thanks to Koken and Gam Lou. Habib the Eagle. Nurmagomedov. GG 52 in the books. Over now. Happy birthday.
This is a Valor Hour Quick Fix on Radio Influence.
I'm really pumped for this. These guys have been jawing at each other. This is the fight everybody wants to see. You talk about a clash of styles, the striking, the footwork, the elusiveness of Conor McGregor, the strength and wrestling and grappling of Khabib. It's his style makes fights, as they say. And man, this one I'm really pumped for. Khabib opened as a heavy favorite, -245, with Conor coming back at +175. I knew whenever that line came out that if you wanted Conor, you needed to get on him then, because most of the money would come in on his side, and that is what's happened. Of course, Khabib is still the favorite at -165, with Conor returning +155. I think that line will drop even more as we get closer and closer to the fight, and I'm going to make a play on the notorious Conor McGregor here, and +155, one unit +155 for Conor. I think he goes out there and knocks him out.
The Valor Hour with Tim Loy can be found on iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, and RadioInfluence.com.